We welcome you into a Mother's Day edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the Bat, at C70 on Twitter, with me, Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black, and at Tara Wellman on Twitter, as Mike Shannon said. It's Mother's Day, so happy birthday to all you mothers out there. Hope you've had a good day. Because if you have had a good day, that probably means you didn't sit down and watch the Cardinals today, or really all this week. As depressing as it was last week when Tara and I got together and we talked about getting swept by the Cubs in a situation that was just less than ideal, the Cardinals go home at a place where they had really defended home turf, if you will, 12-4, I think, going into this this homestand, and they go 2-5 against the Phillies and the Pirates and lose both series and do so in some fairly ugly fashion at times, at sometimes very frustrating fashion. And as much fun as scoring 17 runs on Thursday night was, that doesn't really make us feel much better when you talk about this team. Tara, it's really kind of a systematic failure, at least to some degree. I guess maybe the starting rotation was the highlight of the week, but the pitching didn't go, and the bullpen is, hit a bump or two. What was the most frustrating thing for you this week?
Oh, boy. How long do we have again? No, I think what is the most frustrating thing for me right now is that we keep saying, if the starting pitching comes around, this team's going to be really dangerous. Well, the starting pitching was strong this week. Dakota Hudson got beat up a little bit today, but nonetheless, particularly appearances from Adam Wainwright and Miles Michaelis that were really, really great. They were everything that you need those guys to be, and the Cardinals put up a single run in each of those games. That's the most frustrating thing to me, because we've seen this offense go, not only because it put up 17 runs. I mean, the pitchers that they scored those runs off of are not necessarily the best that the Pirates had to offer. So 17 runs is great, but not necessarily reflective of what they should be capable of against the better arms in that bullpen. And we saw that with Crick and with Velasquez. And, these are guys that the Cardinals are going to have to deal with in the division, as well as, similar arms from other teams. We saw a little bit of that in Philly as well, trying to beat up on a bullpen that has been struggling, and they just didn't. So the frustrating thing for me is that the pitching did what the pitching was supposed to do for the most part a number of times this week, and that offense that we just a couple weeks ago were talking about being so powerful and so dominant and kind of capable of scoring at will just evaporated. And that's concerning, not because I think what we saw 2 weeks ago was such an anomaly, but because for it all to just disappear that quickly is, it's just I don't quite know how you make that change with everyone all at once.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They should have done so much better, just even by any reasonable standard, given what they received from the starters. They hit, if I did my math right, which is always iffy, they hit .206 with a .309 slugging on this homestand, which is not good. But then when you factor out the big game, they hit .171 and they had a .267 slugging, and that's not going to do it. You can have Cy Young and Greg Maddux and all those great players in their prime. You're not going to win a lot of games that way. I guess probably the most frustrating game must have been Adam Wainwright's game, because they kept putting on base runners and they kept getting situations where, and all they needed. He gave up a home run to start the game. And then he went six more innings basically,
yeah,
without giving up anything. And they put runners on and runners on and runners on, and they could not. All he needed was a hit or a sacrifice fly or something to at least tie it. And it took him getting out of the game before they tied it, and then Andrew Miller gave it right back. I think that was, but yeah. You're right. This team. it feels like there's always going to be something to some degree. You know, because we have talked about it, I think, in the past. You know, once Carpenter and Goldschmidt get going, it's this team is just going to be, you know, just look out. Well, now Marcell Ozuna is struggling, and Carpenter and Goldschmidt haven't kicked in yet either. But everybody doesn't click at the same time. And all parts of this team are unlikely to click at the same time. You've just got to win with what you've got, and Cardinals aren't doing that right now. You know, right now they're tied with the Pirates virtually for third place. They're about as close to the Reds as they are to first place. And it's mid-May. It's not September 1st. And there's no need to necessarily throw in the huge panic button. But, you know, it does feel like it's getting to that point where maybe there needs to be some shuffling. I mean, you know, I know it's very easy for Mike Shildt to run out basically the same lineup every day, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. I can understand the reasoning for it, but you know, it feels like there needs to be some sort of kick in the pants right now, because a 2-9 run over the last 11, losing at home, losing on the road, losing slugfest like today, losing pitching duels. I don't know what the shakeup is, but something kind of needs to happen.
Yeah. And first of all, I just want to clarify, it's Crick and Vasquez that are the back end of the bullpen for the Pirates. Velasquez was the starter of the first game of the Phillies series. Yeah. Just don't want to clarify.
Same thing.
Because I said that and then went, that's not what I was actually trying to say. It's been a long week. But nonetheless, you're right. And I think that is what we have yet to see from Mike Shildt, is what happens when you hit a stretch like this where you're so close to a lot of things going so right, but they don't. You know, how do you, as the motivator or as the strategist or as the guy who's calling the shots in game or whatever it is, pick whichever hat you want him to wear, you know, he's got to pull the right strings. That's what a great manager does. At the same time, he's not the one on the field striking out or giving up a home run when you have a 3-run lead. You know, those are things that there is always going to be a balance there, and the players play no matter what Mike Shildt does, no matter what strings he pulls. So the biggest problem this week has been execution. Now, we can talk about his weird propensity for bunting in the most inopportune times if you want. That's a Mike Shildt thing. But nonetheless, even in those cases, it was poor execution of that game plan that led to it not working. So to some degree, it's always going to fall on the players to execute, and they didn't do that this week. And, you know, how Mike Shildt maybe mixes things up in this next week, whether it's the order of the lineup or who plays and who sits, or, you know, when you bring in a guy as a defensive replacement, or, you know, how you get Marcell Ozuna back on track, because he was on such a tear that I felt like, and we talked about this, I felt like he was the guy I wanted at the plate in any situation where they had a possibility of scoring. And he's basically non-existent in the last week as far as the offense goes. So that sort of roller coaster where you have the inconsistency in execution, I don't know. I mean, I'm glad I'm not Mike Shildt sitting somewhere in Atlanta tonight trying to figure out how to get these guys to hit when they have scoring chances. But, you know, that's part of the job.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you've got the one guy that probably is still hitting, Jose Martinez. But that means you have to play him in the field.
Yeah.
And that didn't work so well, at least today. You know, so then where does that balance get struck? Yeah, you're right. It's a difficult thing for Mike Shildt to deal with right now. And, I mean, that's why they hired him, so he can make these kind of decisions and make these kind of choices. I think I just want to hear you rant on it, but the bunting was weird. It feels to me like there's, at least in the situations we saw with Adam Wainwright in his game on Friday, and then Yairo Munoz, which, again, if a guy misses the sign and you call him down there to then, you know, make sure he bunts, I think that's probably losing a little bit of the, you know, surprise.
Not quite.
That,
yeah.
You know, it's like, why don't you just pull the big sign up? Because everybody knew that's what he probably was supposed to do. But, you know, I think both of those times, there was this maybe irrational fear of the double play, which, you know, with all the launch angle and lift and all this kind of stuff that we're talking about these days, you would think double plays would be less likely. And they do happen, and I mean, that could have. But I don't know. It seems like there's a really let's avoid the worst situation, which is kind of what we saw with the previous manager. Sometimes it felt like it's like we're going to bunt them just so we don't hit into a double play. And, well, you know, when you bunt with, you know, runners on first and third and one out, well, then you got second and third with two outs, and it doesn't, you know, yeah, you're waiting for a hit.
Doesn't help you at all.
Yeah, that didn't really help you. So, I don't, again, I didn't read the post-game quotes either time to see if there was some explanation given for both of those things, but it just didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, specifically the Munoz bunt, I did hear Mike Schilt's sort of explanation. And listen, I appreciate Mike Schilt's candidness in his post-game comments. And I feel like as far as managers go, he's incredibly transparent in offering an explanation for things. His explanations for the bunting calls, man, I don't quite buy it. I mean, he basically said, you know, we're playing for one run there, and we felt like that was the best way to put ourselves in position to score. It was more nuanced than that, but essentially that was the gist of it. And, you know, look, Jairo Munoz is on the team because he can hit. Right. That's why he's on the team. So if you don't trust a guy who's there for that purpose to be able to hit, and you trust him more to bunt when no one on this roster has shown any sort of, you know, remarkable skill for bunting well, unless it's perhaps for a base hit, and somehow that's an entirely different scenario, like Munoz or Colton Wong or Matt Carpenter has done it on occasion. But the sacrifice bunt is not a thing that anyone on this roster does well. So to call for it repeatedly when you have guys at the plate who can at least put the ball in play in some fashion, why are you giving up that out so readily without... I don't know. It just, it always seems, and yes, I'm coming from a position of being very anti-bunt. but it just, part of the reason for that is because I so rarely see it executed well. And this is not a team that has executed that very well. And to, you know, minimize the chances that they have to score in a game where outs are very precious. Mm-hmm. I get the idea. The reverse of that is, well, runs are hard to come by, so let's play for one and go from there. But that's not how this offense is designed to work. So it seems like a very, like you said, a very worst case scenario, a very let's, you know, limit the options as well as the opportunities kind of call that doesn't really seem to make sense. And obviously we saw it in two cases. It didn't work. So it's easy to criticize it when it didn't work. Had it worked out like he planned, maybe this would be a different conversation, although I still don't think I would be a fan of it conceptually, just on principle. But nonetheless, it does seem to be a very, it's one of the things about Mike Schilt that is a bit more old school. And it is a bit more, let's do the small ball thing and try to create a run in a very manipulated, manufactured way. And I don't know, I just don't feel like this team does those things that well to make that the best option that they have available.
Well, and especially not with a guy like Munoz, who has enough trouble getting at bats to actually hit in the first place.
Right.
I mean, it's not the guy that's kind of in a rhythm and it kind of can drop that button down or whatever. It's, you know, a guy that doesn't play very much. I mean, he's played a little bit more of late. He got his chance to start today, but it just felt kind of weird to bring a guy like that off the bench. And again, he's pinch hitting. It's not like it just happened to be his spot in the thing. He's pinch hitting.
And also, I don't know. This is just part of my rant on bunting, but it's so bizarre to me that, you know, often we talk about why hitters don't just bunt to beat the shift, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the explanation that is offered is you're taking a guy out of what he spends so much time learning how to do, which is hit, swing the bat. So if all of a sudden, you know, you're spending all this time learning how to be a better hitter, and you spend all this time with your approach as a hitter, and then you ask him to do something that he never really does, he's probably not going to be very good at that. Well, the same is true as a sacrifice bunt, as if you're setting up that scenario to bunt to beat the shift. If it's not something that they... we talk about it like bunting is the easiest thing in the world to do. It obviously isn't, right, especially right. when you've got pitchers who know what you're trying to do and they can counter that. So it's not as if it's just this thing that everyone who puts a bat in their hand should be able to do. And when they spend so much time working on launch angle, working on, you know, the mechanics of their swing and saying, you know, getting their hands extended, whatever it is, pick whichever piece of the mechanics you want to talk about, then to have them square to bunt, like, it's a totally different thing you're asking them to do. And if it's not practiced, and I don't know how much time is spent with these guys on their bunting ability, because it's a thing that we assume is easy, and then we see the results where it's not easy. It's the same reason that Matt Carpenter doesn't like to bunt for a base hit, because it's not the thing that he's good at.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really need to say anything. You did fine. I mean,
really, that's all I got.
What else do? I mean, you know. And, you know, yeah. I mean, if you want to bunt there, you might as well just, you know, send up a pitcher. I mean, because especially after you, you know, I mean, even, you know, he misses the sign on the first one, and Quindle pulls him down there, and you know, Danny Mac and them are saying, well, you know, he looks like he missed the sign for the bunt. Yep, sure did. So if you're going to do that, send him a pitcher who at least has practiced bunting, and let him bunt the guy over. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing to me to ask someone to do something they don't practice because it's supposed to be easier.
Yeah.
It's like asking a substitute off the bench to go shoot free throws. Well, if they don't practice shooting free throws, it's not easier just because there's not a defender in their face. Right. If that's not a thing that they do, then it's not easier just because it's a free throw. Anyway, that's it. That's all I got.
You're good.
It's really not, but we've heard enough.
Well, and we only still have a couple minutes left, so, you know. Let's talk a little about, we talked about it before the show, but let's go ahead and let's talk about Dakota Hudson. Pitches today, gives up 3 runs before the Cardinals get a chance to bat. Now they turn around and get those back, stake him to a lead, and he pitches through the 6th without giving up anything more. That being, and even though there may be some improvement, you know, he didn't pitch. His numbers against the Phillies look pretty ugly because he had 6 unearned runs again behind him from some of the most sure defenders that you're going to have. So that's just a bad day and bad luck. But overall, boy, it still feels like Hudson as a starter is just playing with fire. High walk rate. You know, the splits against lefties are incredible for the fact that he's made 8 starts this year. You know, the numbers they put on the broadcast tonight of when he's ahead, behind in the count, or he's ahead of the count versus when he's behind in the count. I mean, if hitters are ahead in the count, they're hitting 500 plus over against him. And that's just, again, this deep into the season is ridiculous. When do they make a pull? You know, we talked about needing to jar this team, needing to do something. When do they decide that, you know, somebody else needs this spot? You know, Austin Gomber, Daniel Ponce de Leon, whoever it may be, at least temporarily needs to take over that spot in the rotation.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because you're right. We've seen Dakota Hudson have these innings where not only does he kind of get blown up, but man, do they take forever. I don't know that there's anyone. I would be curious to see the timing stats, because I'm not sure there's anyone in baseball who is slower between pitches with runners on base than Dakota Hudson. It is insane. And I can't imagine that that actually helps him, because we saw the rest of his appearance on Sunday that when he's able to find that rhythm and that routine and that groove, he's so much better. So when he slows down so dramatically when there are runners on base, I have to believe that that is part of what messes with his confidence and his conviction behind his pitches. I don't know how you fix that with a guy to just tell him, hey, pitch faster. Yeah. But I have to believe that there's something going on that's a part of that process, that not only is there a guy on base, so it's changing a little bit of what he's actually physically doing, but it's changing the mentality so drastically that I can't imagine there's a lot of room for, you know, shutting off your brain and just throwing the baseball like he needs to be able to do sometimes. So there's a little bit of that, but it also is complicated because he'll have that bad inning and then shut down a lineup like he did today. And we talk about those splits, whichever ones you want to look at, because there is more than one that is bad. But then he shuts down that same lineup in, you know, five more innings. So it's a start like today that after the first inning had everybody thinking, wow, this experiment has to be over. Give me Ryan Helsley. Give me Austin Gomber. Give me Ponce de Leon. Somebody from the Memphis rotation has to be, you know, a better option than this. Mm-hmm. And then innings 2 through 6, he looks like a guy that should be able to be in the rotation every 5 days. So I said that because I don't know how the organization is going to handle that as far as making a move when there's plenty of reason to believe he's capable as a major league starter. It's just all of those underlying numbers lead you to believe that while he might be getting results after the pressure's off, he's not putting them in a position to win beforehand. And that's where a lot of those numbers get really ugly. And it's not ideal for a starter to have such dramatic lefty-righty splits, or, you know, to be, you know, pretty consistently falling behind batters when they're hitting 500 off of him when he does fall behind. So, mm-hmm. It's a start like today kind of just muddies the water a little bit, because you can see both possibilities. You can see the version of Dakota Hudson that doesn't belong in a major league rotation. You can also see the version that does. And I don't know how you reconcile those two things with what else you have to offer. But I would say that, you know, the one bad inning thing is not exclusive to Dakota Hudson. We've seen that a little bit with Jack Flaherty. Of course, years ago, we talked about it with Lance Lynn. But there are other options for the Cardinals right now. And I think the question becomes, you know, how far do you go into the season with a guy that may not be your best option?
Yeah. And I mean, on the flip side of that, when a guy's are struggling, and he is, and we could get into the, you know, Michael Walker is not necessarily mm-hmm. lighting the world's on fire, although you don't have the options with him as you do with Dakota Hudson. But when you've got a guy, you know, Austin Gomber, 4-0, 282, 44 strikeouts, 14 walks in Memphis. Daniel Ponce de Leon, 3-1, 303 ERA. Those strikeout walk rate isn't as great there. But, you know, two guys that are performing well in Memphis and have done, you know, fairly well, especially Ponce de Leon, at the major league level. You know, it becomes, when are the, if these guys are too good for Memphis, which they kind of look like right now, when are you going to use them in the major leagues? Because there's obviously some needs there.
Yeah.
You can do better than Dakota Hudson in the rotation, it feels like. At least you've got to at least try. You know, and Austin Gomber could come up and do like he did last year and struggle and you know, in 3 or 4 starts, and we're like, why did we do this? But I think you've got to the point where you have to at least try and see. You know, Tyler Webb has looked rough in the bullpen. It's a guy that probably needs to go down. And maybe, you know, moving Hudson to the bullpen and letting one of these guys, you know, take that rotation spot. I don't know what it is, but yeah, you're right. How late do you go? Because we're getting, what? I mean, here we're really getting to the quarter mark. We're 25% of the way through the season, and, you know, the Cardinals are 3.5 games out now that the Cubs have won tonight. And they're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, you know. Two weeks ago, we're talking about how this team looks like a juggernaut, a team that looked like maybe a 100-win team, and now, you know, it just feels like, you know, when are they ever going to win a game again? You know, to some degree, and it seems like it has. I don't know. I mean, some of the games that I watched, and I had to watch all this week, but I was watching Friday or Saturday's game. I guess maybe it was Saturday's game. Probably was, Saturday's game after the rain delay, which that factored in. But that was the quietest I've heard Busch Stadium in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't tell that people were actually there. That may not have been. But it was just, and I mean, part of that was just the way that game was. But there was just not much going on there. It was really, really still. And that's not what the front office, at least, I wouldn't think, wants to see. I mean, then again, you've got a game like today where they set an attendance record for Busch Stadium. So, at least in tickets sold, so maybe they don't care if it's loud. I don't know. But I don't feel like, you know, like Alan and I were talking yesterday, and he pointed out a lot of things are getting overshadowed by the fact that the Blues are still playing hockey.
Yeah.
Because if the Blues were out of the picture, I think there would be a lot more uproar about what this team just went through. And maybe that would put a little bit more pressure on the front office. I'm starting to wonder, I think that the idea of fan pressure on this front office is maybe a myth, no matter what happens. But I don't know. It just feels like, again, that they're starting to lose. It's starting to feel like a little bit of, you know, what we've seen over the last couple of years, and that hasn't been that successful.
Yeah, I think the saving grace for me right now is that we've seen what they're capable of offensively. We've now seen that there are some good reasons to believe, particularly as far as Miles Mikolas is concerned, that he's capable of repeating maybe not the extremes of the success he had last year, but being really solid every 5 days. And we've seen a couple of back-to-back starts now from him where he looked much more settled in, looked much more like he was able to adjust on the fly as necessary and use some different pitches than he did last year, maybe sort of rewrite the book a little bit on what he's going to do against hitters. So the silver lining for me is that we saw that early enough. We saw them look terrible the first week of the season, make some adjustments, look really, really strong after that. Now they've looked terrible for a little over a week, and now we get to see if they can adjust again. That's, I think I said this last week, this is a game of adjustments, and, you know, you're not going to be, it's not a straight line from the beginning of the season to the end where, you know, if you do the same thing every single day, it's going to have the same results because the guy on the other side is also trying to figure out what you've done so far. So all of that to say, yes, it's frustrating and it's been difficult to watch. And a lot of what we've seen in this last week has been very reminiscent of, you know, stretches last year or the year before. But I guess on the one hand, it's just reminiscent of any team that goes through a week or two where they're playing pretty bad baseball, where they're not getting the breaks that they were before, where they don't come up with that big clutch hit. I'm still not at a point where I feel like everything that we saw in that good stretch from this team has just evaporated into thin air and isn't really a part of who their real DNA, what their real DNA is. I just think that they have to figure out how to manage these moments and maybe shorten the length of them a little bit as they go along. So, yeah, I don't know that that really offers a whole lot of valid analysis, except that it's we've seen them look great. We've seen them look pretty terrible. Maybe the reality is somewhere in the middle, but there's still always that potential for what we saw in the stretch where they were the best team in baseball, at least for a little while. So I'm not overly panicked yet, but certainly frustrated by the week that they threw out there at home when they had pretty good opportunities in every one of those games.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen, you know, we saw August last year. We know this team, obviously it's a little bit different makeup, but this is a, you know, what Shields has done. They can go on runs, but, you know, then September happened last year, and that wasn't as nearly as nice. So, you know, if we're going to alternate good months and bad months, I don't know if I can handle that or not. You know, I guess it means we're, you know, we got to get through the rest of May, and then we can have a good run through June, maybe. I don't know. But
I mean, I still don't think Paul Goldschmidt is going to look like this for, mm-hmm. you know, the entirety of the season. He's, over the course of his career, been pretty bad comparatively in the month of May. So there's reason to expect more from him. Like I said, we just sort of saw Miles Mikolas turn that corner. I think Jack Flaherty still has a lot to learn, but there's certainly plenty in his portfolio to believe that he's going to have some good outings as well. I mean, even the bullpen blowups in a couple of games, John Brebbia has been spectacular. So to give up a couple of home runs on the season, and that's the entirety of the runs he's given up, I'm not super worried about that. The guys that have been in the mix, whether it's Tyler Webb or Dominic Leone or Luke Gregerson, that haven't looked so great, you've got Carlos Martinez right on the brink of coming back. So theoretically, that gives you a boost in the bullpen. They have options in the rotation. So again, my point is, there are a lot of things that have gone very, very wrong in the last week. There's still very valid reasons to believe that some things we haven't seen at all go right yet will, in fact, go right at some point. So maybe that'll be when we start to get a feel for what that middle ground is between the best team in baseball and whatever the mess was that we saw this week.
Hopefully so. Hopefully we get a little bit closer to that best team in baseball, because yeah, for the fact that this team was 20-10, that seems so long ago. and now they're what, 22-19 or whatever it may be. It's not pleasant. So hopefully and again, normally you'd say, well, you know, you're going home, you know, when you come home, that's where the winning happens. Not this time. Now they got to go on the road. Yeah. They got to go out to Atlanta, who's just, you know, it's kind of starting to maybe put some things together, and then they go to Texas, where you would like to think they could put up some runs and get some things going, but you know, it's
Texas. We've said that before.
We have. And even then, I mean, if you want to talk about it, you know, they go to Texas, they have an off day, they play two games against the Royals, then they have an off day, then they play three more against, I can't tell right now, but and then they have an off day. I mean, it's a lot of stopping and starting over the next few weeks. Whether that'll matter or not, we'll see, but it seems like we've seen that, right? I mean, we've seen them this year, you know, have trouble winning the day after an off day. You know, if that becomes the case, then that's trouble when you have four in the next 2 weeks. Hopefully they'll shake that off and you know, the rest will do them some good, but
they've also played 17 in a row without an off day. So, yeah. I mean, you're also looking at the end of a long stretch where maybe an off day will do them good.
Yeah, and that's true. That's very true. Especially when, as you said, you know, Mike Shildt has this, you know, stamp that has the lineup that he just, you know, he changes the little wheel that says Fowler or Bader and stamps it in.
Right.
You know, getting some of these guys, but I don't know. I agree. I think it will, but, you know, Carpenter's not hitting because he's tired. He hasn't hit all year.
Right.
You know, Paul Goldschmidt isn't hitting because he's, I mean, Paul Goldschmidt plays 160 games every year anyway. So I think some of that, you know, I think what Mike Shildt is trying to do is to give them the reps so they can get into that rhythm and routine, and it just hasn't necessarily clicked yet. You know, Goldschmidt homer today, had a little bit better homestand than I think we've seen out of him for a while, so maybe he's starting to get there. You know, Matt Carpenter has shown some signs of life as well.
If any of them feel like I do about the weather lately, it is no wonder that they have played like they're in a fog in the last week. So maybe some warm weather and some sunshine will do them good.
Hopefully so. I know here the rain has been constant, but this week is supposed to be about 80s and sunny, I think, for much all the week. So maybe that'll filter down to Atlanta as well, and some in Texas when they're there, and that'll give them a little extra vitamin C, and that'll get the bats going. It can't hurt, right?
Stranger things have happened.
Really can't hurt. So. All right, well, Tara and I will be with you next week as we will talk about this 6-game road trip that they're about to go on. And hopefully things are a lot more interesting to talk about next week. And some positive things, let's say, if nothing else, to talk about with the Cardinals. But until then, that's Tara, and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under Podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.